Hello again. My previous podcast, where I was talking about shame and the way that our experiences in infancy probably are a big contributing factor into how we develop that sense of I'm not good enough that gets really stuck in us and becomes increasingly hard to change. I thought that it might be a nice next topic to address the idea of psychological adulthood. So while I would say, I don't know the exact stats on this, but I would say a lot, maybe even most people do not ever really achieve a psychological adulthood. That's not to say that people aren't, you know, doing grown-up stuff like paying their bills and going to jobs and having families and whatnot. But in terms of actual psychological adulthood, many people do not actually go through that transformation. And I'll talk in a minute about what psychological adulthood is. But I just like to start with that premise that just getting older does not automatically make you psychologically an adult. So the definition of psychological adulthood that I'm operating from is the idea that you no longer either idealize nor demonize your parents. You begin to see them as fellow human beings that are neither better nor, you know, fundamentally worse than any other person that you might meet on the street. Now, granted, I mean, some people's parents are objectively pretty awful. I mean, for real. Again, those are outlier situations. But even when people are objectively really falling down on the job of being a decent human being made in a major way, they still are within the spectrum of how human beings sometimes can be. And more often people are somewhere in the middle, neither amazingly fantastic nor demonically evil, right? I mean, you know, so most people are right there in a wide swath of middle ground on their the balance between their good and their not so good qualities. But in the previous episode, I talked about how we come into this world as infants, looking to get our needs met, and we go through various methods of interacting with the environment in order to get those needs met. Well, I think there's another part of it too that I suspect that in the same way that we neuroscience has shown that we come into this world already with the templates of language acquisition already in place, for instance, in the brain. We already have we're born with this sort of neural or psych or mental infrastructure in place so that when we hear language, we will acquire it, and that we aren't born with it as a blank slate. You know, we don't come into this world completely just without any pre-installed software. We actually do kind of come in with kind of locked and loaded for some of the things that we'll need to do when we get here. And I think that one of the things that we have in place when we come in is an expectation that the care provider that we get, the parent or parents or whatever care provider that we get, will be really good at it. That they will be a perfect parent. So it's almost as if we come into this world prepared to have all of our needs met, prepared to think that the parent that we get is going to be perfect. And when we inevitably get human parents instead of perfect parents, in the funny way that tiny baby brains and child brains are, instead of immediately getting that insight, oh, I thought I was going to get perfect parents. Turns out I got kind of sketchy, not so great some ways good, some ways not so good parents. We don't do that. Our first impulse is still to think, oh, I have the best parent. I have perfect parents. My parents are the best. And then when the parents behave in some good and some not so good ways, we continue to assume that they are perfect. And if they are inadequate at meeting our needs, it must be because there's something wrong with us. So, of course, that ties back to my previous episode when I talked about assuming that other people's bad behavior is because I'm bad, rather than realizing that people's not so good behavior or their bad behavior is really just coming out of them. You know, everybody comes by their dysfunction, honestly, you know, so very likely the parent, you know, just like you didn't get perfect parents, your parents didn't get perfect parents. And sometimes the parents that your parents got are even worse than the parents that you got. So, you know, there's always good reasons why people are not great as care providers. And so there's always a really solid explanation of why that is. It's an explanation, but it doesn't change the fact that it still wasn't everything that you needed. So as we move through that process, initially we think, oh, my parents the best, my parents perfect. And then we later on, when we begin to realize, oh, my parent is not perfect, rather than immediately going to a more balanced view of, oh, I guess I just have a complex human parent instead of a perfect parent, we continue down that path by then, you know, we've had that parent on a pedestal, they're the best parent ever. And then when we realize they're not perfect, we tend to just kind of knock them off that pedestal and let them fall directly into, you know, a dumpster and decide that they're the worst person ever. They're just a horrible person. And one of the ways to look at it is that if you think about your friends, people that you care about, people that you choose to have in your life, if you're really honest about it, and if you can see them realistically, you'll be able to see that they have some good and some not so good qualities. There's things about them that you think are great. There's other things that you kind of go, oh, that guy, he's doing that. And, but you can still really care about that person and not need them to be perfect, because I don't think we come in with that same template of assuming that we're going to get perfect friends. You know, we come in thinking we're going to get perfect parents, but we don't seem to think we need to have perfect friends. So usually there are exceptions to that, which have to do with sometimes people get caught up in that same dynamic of having people either on a pedestal or in a dumpster. And they apply that generally to everyone in their life, not just their parents. But I'd say for the most part, people primarily apply that standard to their parents. So, okay, so I started out thinking, my parent is perfect. Then you find out they're not perfect. And you go, my parent's the worst parent that ever lived. They're bad. And then a lot of people stay in that kind of ping pong game inside of them. We're like, no, my parents are really great. No, I have the worst parents. Sometimes people get stuck in one or the other of those perspectives where they continue forever and ever to think my parent is perfect, and then continue to, you know, basically ignore or avoid thinking about the ways in which that parent's behavior has a negative effect on themselves and maybe their spouse or, you know, other people. Or they dive full on into, I have the worst parent. They are irredeemable. They are a horrible, horrible person. And there's just no coming back from that, right? And that is also an imbalanced view of most people, right? Most people actually are much more complex and have some great qualities and some not so great qualities. Okay, so one of the steps in the course of stepping into psychological adulthood and being able to see one's parents as they are is this beginning point of recognizing that that they were imperfect, and due to their inevitable imperfections, they were not ever even going to be capable of 100% meeting all of your needs. If they are within that broad spectrum of mediocrity that most of us fall into, then, they met some of your needs, and they were also inadequate in providing some of your other needs. And if you begin that process of going, okay, they're not the worst person in the whole wide world. However, their imperfections, their crappy parent, some of the ways in which they had crappy parenting skills, had a negative effect on me. So it's like saying, yes, it was inadequate. That inadequacy did affect me negatively. And so it's acknowledging that, but also recognizing that we shouldn't be surprised that the imperfect parents we get are going to parent imperfectly. So that's part of that step, that stepping into a psychological adulthood. The next piece of psychological adulthood to think about is also, even if you recognize that your parent, as inadequate as it was, as they were, was doing what they were capable of. It was, in essence, the best that they could do. Then you still have to mourn the loss of having what you needed. It's like a mourning that I didn't get what I needed entirely. I didn't get the care provision that I really believe I needed. And yet, I can't really blame the parent as being intentionally, intentionally negligent. They might have been negligent, and many parents are negligent for a variety of reasons, but it isn't because they had it in for you specifically. They just weren't capable of caring for anybody for whatever reasons of their own. And I'm speaking there here of like the more extreme situations where you have some people had really, really, truly sick parents who were not who did a lot of damage for real, and then some people who had parents who didn't do a ton of damage, but just still were not able to meet every need exactly as you wanted it to be met. In whatever the case, it's mourning the loss of the fact that you didn't get what you needed. Now that there's that piece. So it's first acknowledging that they were imperfect in the first place, so it shouldn't be a big shock that they didn't do a perfect job. That doesn't discount the fact that it negatively affected you. And then the next stage is realizing that there were things that were unmet needs, and that now you, as an adult, it's your job to fill in the gaps on that. It's your job to figure out what needs your imperfect parents were not able to meet for you, and then for you to figure out how to meet them for yourself. And I think that if there is a design or a plan or any order to the universe, which I lean to the side of thinking there is, although I don't claim to know exactly how that works, but I do have a strong sense that there is order in the universe. I think that the reason why we have that set up is because if we could get our needs entirely met by another person, we would never really grow. We would never really evolve as a species. We would just all stay in a kind of stasis. And of course, that's the shadow side of the idea of perfection. Perfection requires stasis, meaning perfection, if it existed, would require that nothing ever change. So if we had perfect parents who had perfect children, who had perfect parents who had perfect children, on and on and on and on, there would be no growth, there would be no innovation, there would be no expansion. So it's that we are ourselves imperfect, and we are surrounded by imperfect people is how we evolve. Our consciousness expands. Our consciousness finds new solutions, and in that way, we expand the consciousness, the the consciousness of the universe itself, essentially. So I think imperfection is built into this dimension because it's what allows for creation. It's what allows for us to create and expand. That's big picture. But in the smaller picture, part of it is that there are, you know, things. Maybe you have feelings of abandonment. Well, at a certain point, even if you're a parent, if your parent that was did things that led to your feelings of abandonment, even if they 100% apologized and said, "Wow, I get it. I totally effed up on that. I am so sorry." And all the things that you might ever imagine you would want that. Oh, and let's say they felt so bad about it or whatever it is that you think that would solve that for you. Even if they did that, you would still have to clean up the mess. You would still have to figure out how to resolve your fears of being abandoned yourself. In fact, if they did sincerely have a revelation of their own inadequacy, that would primarily benefit them on their journey. It would benefit them to maybe feel like, oh, wow, I want to be different. I want to do better. And you might momentarily feel a little better if people own their stuff. It definitely feels better when people own their responsibility in their negative impact than if they deny it. I have to say that's true. But it doesn't solve it. You still end up having to solve it yourself. I'm not the pretty one in the family or whatever. The whole family getting together for a big, intervention and telling you how pretty you are when you're 28 is not going to really resolve the fact that when you were 8, everybody told you you were the ugly one or whatever. I'm just throwing out various different kinds of scenarios. So think about whatever it is that you yourself feel that you didn't get from your family of origin. And fill in the blanks with that. Whatever that is, there's no time traveling back to get that resolved in real time where it needs to be changed. It's anything that any unfinished business from inadequate care provision when you were a little kid, you have to fill in the blanks on that yourself as an adult. And even if you could have perfect parents, I really don't think it would be that healthy to have even that in the long run. And I know that sounds like a sour grapes thing. Well, I didn't want perfect parents anyway. But I think from a bigger picture thing, I think we don't have that partly because it's a feature of the just particular dimension we are in, which is inherently imperfect, so that we have to innovate in the realm of consciousness and expand and grow and evolve. Okay, so the first step in that psychological adulthood transition, like I said, is to recognize that your parents never were perfect in the first place, that it wasn't possible for them to do it. It wasn't possible for them to meet all your needs. And then to grieve the fact that even though you might understand why they weren't perfect or that they weren't perfect, you still have to fill in the blanks for yourself and heal what you need to heal as an adult. And then to actually heal it and own it and take responsibility for your own peace. It's like, so this is a great example of how responsibility isn't the same as blame. Meaning, if I don't get what I needed, it's not my quote fault. It's not because I'm bad, but nevertheless, I'm responsible for it, for healing it, for the simple reason that I'm the only one who really can. I'm the only one who can heal me. You are the only one who can heal you on certain levels, in the sense that nothing that anyone says or does will do it for you. You'll have to figure out in your own life how to heal what needs to be healed. So that is psychological adulthood and what I mean by it and why most people don't do it. And yeah, let me just jump in for just the one last little bit, and I'll talk about how we don't have any context for this kind of shift into psychological adulthood in contemporary society, but that the need for this kind of psychological shift has been known to our species for thousands and thousands of years. You see in ancient cultures and, you know, current systems of belief that are a little bit closer to our ancestors' ceremonies and things like that, where there are rites of passage. And a rite of passage, if it's really not just a symbolic thing, but an actual practical thing, a person, an adolescent goes through a rite of passage, and after they go through that rite of passage in their community, there's no question anymore about whether or not they're an adult. There's no question in their own mind. There's no question in their parents' mind. There's no question in anybody's mind. They've done that. Now they are an adult. And we don't have that in our society. Even someone, you know, someone turns 18. Well, okay, now they're a legal adult, but they still don't necessarily feel like an adult. Oh, well, now they're 21, so they can drink and gamble, but we don't really feel like they're an adult. You know, and so on and so forth. So we can go on forever and ever and not really have that sense of dun, 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 you are no longer a child, right? There's nothing that is a real demarcation for us in that. We have the vestiges of those things in our culture, like, for instance, a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah. Those are vestiges of, in the Jewish tradition, you know, of that rite of passage after which you are a man or a woman, right? But, and not a child. But in terms of the practical application, people still might treat you like a child. You might still feel like a child. Or quinceañera is when a girl turns 15 and she has a big party and celebration, and typically a mass at church, and all these things in, that is supposed to signify that she is now a woman. But in truth, even after the big party, the young woman, after her quinceañera, she's, you know, not likely to be actually treated like an adult woman. Or what's some other examples? Oh, in the Catholic tradition, there's confirmation, which also happens at about 15 years old. So somewhere between like 13, 14, 15 is when those ceremonies take place traditionally. In our culture, while there are legal mile markers where we say, okay, this person is a legal adult or that, and so forth, we don't really have that practical sense in society of like, yes, you're an adult now. And you have all of the rights and responsibilities of an adult. And that's that. We don't have that currently in our current society. And that is a really big missing piece. I don't know exactly how to do that in a real collective way, because we don't have one cohesive expectation about that. We don't have any sort of intercultural agreement on what that means and how to do that. But in any case, at this time in history, we don't have it as a community ceremony, at least not one that everybody agrees upon what the expectations are after that rite of passage occurs. Everybody agreeing like, yep, da da da, you are psychologically an adult. I mean, you are practically an adult. You will practice 100% as an adult. We don't have that currently. And so people have this sort of fuzzy feeling of, am I an adult yet? Am I an adult yet? and it's pretty fuzzy for a lot of people, sometimes for their whole entire life. But anyway, so we don't have that. We need it. It's a psychological need that we don't have, but because we don't have it as a collective construct, if we are to do it at all, we have to do it individually. And so that is a bit about that. There's a bit about psychological adulthood. Please leave me a message. Someone told me they left a message one time and I didn't see it, but there's a little link in the show notes where you can leave me a voicemail and maybe you can ask me a question. Maybe you have something cool to talk about. You even want to be a guest on the show. I'm all about it, man. Like, seriously. Ask a question or give an answer or say something about something. And if I have permission to play your message on my show, I will. And otherwise, I'll just maybe just say that you said the thing. But yeah, I would really love to have some feedback. Or if you have topics or questions, something you'd like me to talk about or address, I would really like that so much. So please do. And that's all for today. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.